Hey, everybody. This is the Greencast for March 4th, 2019. Khalida Jarrar. So, I was originally going to talk about the release of Palestinian Minister of Parliament Khalida Jarrar, against the show title, who was released from prison on February 28th. Jewish Voice for Peace had a tweet about it, which I'm going to link to in the show notes. And there is a longer article on Electronic Intifada, which covers her arrest. We'll talk about that after this. I saw this morning on Twitter, that there's a new report from the UN Commission of Inquiry on the 2018 protests in Palestine. Quoting from that tweet, UN Commission of Inquiry on the 2018 protests in Palestine finds that, quote, Israeli snipers shot at journalists, healthcare workers, children and persons with disabilities, knowing they were clearly recognizable as such. I've actually got audio of the commissioner, the head of the commission, actually discussing that along with one other person on the commission. I'm going to go ahead and play that and then we'll talk about it on the other side.
The commission has found reasonable grounds to believe that Israeli security forces committed serious violations of human rights and international humanitarian law. These violations clearly warrant criminal investigation and prosecution, and we call on Israel to conduct meaningful investigations into these serious violations and to provide timely justice and reparations for those killed and injured.
We found that 189 Palestinians were killed, 183 of them with live ammunition, and this included children, people with disabilities, journalists, and paramedics. We also found that 6,106 people were injured by Israeli snipers shooting at protesters with live ammunition. By the end of the year, 122 of these people had suffered amputations. These included 20 children. We're saying that they have intentionally shot children. They've intentionally shot people with disabilities. They've intentionally shot journalists, knowing them to be children, people with disabilities, and journalists.
That first speaker was Santiago Cantón, who is the chair of the UN Commission of Inquiry on the 2018 Palestinian protests. The second speaker was Sarah Hossein, who is also on the same UN Commission of Inquiry. Okay, so it is obvious at this point that this is U.S. imperialism. This is the U.S. symbolically, if nothing else, propping up one of the worst human rights abusers in the region, if not the world. We are still funding Israel with billions of dollars in military aid. This is billions in military aid, that they do not need. Israel is one of the largest arms exporters in the world. Haaretz recently reported that their 2018 arms exports topped $9 billion. To say nothing of the explosion that happened. I shouldn't say explosion. To say nothing of the insane criticism that occurred after Representative Ilhan Omar pointed out the simple and obvious fact that AIPAC, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, which bills itself on its website as America's Israel Lobby, of course presenting its pro-Israel agenda, its particular pro-Israel agenda, as if they speak for all Jewish people everywhere, and we'll get to more of that in a minute. Representative Omar pointed out the simple and obvious fact that the greatest impediment to peace in the region right now is Israel's influence over the American government. Israel's lobbying influence over the American government. And for that, she was called anti-Semitic. There have been incredibly racist and incredibly Islamophobic pictures posted by her state's Republican Party. It is just absolutely insane, insane that we are still supporting one of the largest apartheid states in the world. Gaza is an open-air prison. Palestinians living in I would say Palestine, Israelis would say Israel, are subject to some of the worst human rights abuses in the world. Gaza is facing starvation and malnutrition, malnourishment, lack of access to food and medicine for upwards of 20 million people right now, today. It is the largest humanitarian crisis in the world, and we still give, and it averages out to about $4 billion a year in military aid to a country that sells more than twice that every year in arms around the world. Israel is the sixth or seventh largest arms dealer in the world. We have to absolutely end support for the Israeli apartheid regime. We have to absolutely end support for Israeli abuses of human rights. I absolutely support boycott, divestment, and sanctions. I urge you to do so as well. There will be a link to the full report from the UN Human Rights Council in the show notes, detailing what we know. What we know: Israeli snipers shot at non-protesters, not just protesters. People will inevitably make the case that people throwing bottles and rocks somehow presented a threat that Israeli snipers had to put down with lethal force. And even that is insane. Everybody knows that that's insane. But we know for a fact, beyond any shadow of doubt, that Israeli snipers killed non-protesters. They killed paramedics. They killed journalists reporting on the incident. They killed children. We must end support for the Israeli apartheid regime. We absolutely must. Okay, so now to get to the piece that I wanted to open the show with. A couple of days ago, Jewish Voice for Peace tweeted out that Palestinian Minister of Parliament Khalida Jarar had been released. I'm going to go ahead and quote their tweet here, and there will be a link in the show notes. It read, Palestinian MP Khalida Jarar was released from an Israeli prison where she was held for almost 2 years without charge or trial. And we'll talk about that more in a minute. Back to the tweet. Her case isn't unique. It's crucial to remember that it's the norm for Israel to detain Palestinians for indefinite periods without being charged. And also in a report on Electronic Intifada, reporting on Minister Jarar's release, Tamara Nassar, reporting for Electronic Intifada, writes, The lawmaker pointed to the, quote, difficult conditions female prisoners are living in, especially after they were gathered and transferred from Hasharon prison to Dimon prison, where they live in inhuman conditions. Palestinian Authority Prisoners Committee said that Israeli prison authorities were providing prisoners at Dimon with rotten and expired food. They added that surveillance cameras are still installed in the courtyard, forcing women to wear the hijab, a headscarf, even inside their rooms. This is my aside. This is obvious psychological intimidation. As if imprisoning people without charge isn't intimidating enough. Back to the report. Meanwhile, Palestinians in Israeli jails in the Negev region in southern Israel are dissolving prisoner organizations in protest of crackdowns by Israeli prison authorities. Palestinian women held at Hasharon prison protested the authorities' decision to turn on surveillance cameras in the prison yard in September by refusing to go into the yard. Quote, part of the attack was on female prisoners, Jarar told Watan TV following her release. They're trying to corner female prisoners in a reality where they restart their struggle from square one. Rooms are very humid, again quoting Minister Jarar. Rooms are very humid, electrical installations are dangerous because they're wet, especially in the winter, and it causes fires. The courtyard is filled with cameras. We don't have a library, we don't have classrooms, there is no kitchen, prisoners are forced to cook in humid rooms. Back to the report, Erdogan announced the blocking of prisoner welfare funds from the Palestinian Authority, reducing prisoner autonomy and restricting water supplies. He claimed that prisoners' water consumption is, quote, crazy, and a way for them to, quote, subvert the state, according to Haaretz. And if you follow to Electronic Intifada, there's a link to the Haaretz report in reporter Hassan's posted report on EI. The newspaper did not spell out how much water Palestinians are alleged to use. Aiming to discredit and smear the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement for Palestinian rights, the Israeli government released a report last month titled, quote, Terrorists in Suits, the ties between NGOs promoting BDS and terrorist organizations. The report labels Jarar, a board member of the prisoners' rights group at Amir, as one of, quote, numerous members and terrorist operatives who have become leading figures in non-governmental organizations which delegitimize and promote boycotts against Israel while concealing or downplaying their terrorist past, end quote. Here's the important part that I really, really wanted to get to. According to Hassan's report, it is notable that Israel did not charge Jarar at all in the past 20 months, given their claim that she has, quote, terrorist ties. Jarar is a member of the Palestinian Legislative Council and a former leader of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. Israel considers that political faction, along with virtually all other Palestinian political parties, to be a, quote, terrorist organization. There are currently 8 Palestinian lawmakers in Israeli jails, with 5 being held under administrative detention. And I'm an idiot. As promised, I did screw up that name. That was reporter Tamara Nassar, writing in a report that was published on Electronic Intifada just a couple of days ago on March 2nd. I think it's readily apparent what the playbook is here. Just like we're seeing in the United States, how any opposition to ramping up the war machine in Venezuela is being blamed on Putin, Russian operatives, Russiagate, and the Russian conspiracy. Any opposition to Israel that can't be put down to supposed anti-Semitism is going to be called terrorism. Again, Israel is an apartheid state. It routinely abuses the human rights of Palestinians living in the region. The stories of people being forced out of their homes as the Israeli Defense Forces bulldoze their homes so that they can put up new high-rise apartment buildings, which the Israeli government then rents for insanely cheap rents to quote-unquote settlers so that they can... How should I put this? So that they can create... It is really a slow-motion ethnic cleansing. We'll call it what it is. It's an ethnic cleansing that's occurring right before our eyes, and we have been aiding and abetting it for decades. These are elected representatives, elected by Palestinian people to be their representatives, for whatever it's worth, I would say very little, to be their representatives in parliament. Israel will arrest ministers of parliament for any charge, or in the case of Minister Jarar, no charge whatsoever. She was held for 2 years without charge to intimidate. This is obviously a fear tactic that's being used to shut down Palestinian opposition, to shut down any opposition to the actions of the Israeli government, to try and intimidate the BDS movement into silence. Israel will brook no criticism of its actions. It will brook no criticism of its human rights abuses. It will allow no actual representation of Palestinian interests in its parliament. Any claim that the Palestinian government seeks a peaceful solution in light of all of this, I think, has to be viewed supremely skeptically. We only have to look at the actions. We only have to look at the actions of the Israeli Defense Forces and the rest of the Israeli government. Detaining ministers of parliament without charge. Snipers murdering emergency aid workers, emergency medical personnel, and children. Murdering children to see the truth of their actual agenda. So one other thing that got posted over the weekend, Counterpunch's Facebook page posted an informative infographic that I found really important. It shows a highlighted list of all the countries that the U.S. has been involved with in military and CIA interventions since World War II. There's a credited source, an author, William Blum, who wrote a book called Killing Hope, U.S. and Military CIA Intervention Since World War II, and a second book, Rogue State, published in 2004 and 2005. And the graphic references his website, killinghope.org. And the graphic itself is by Richard D. Vogel at combatingglobalization.com. I will have links for both of those in the show notes. But it's really kind of stunning when you look at it. You can see that the U.S., it visually represents the way that the U.S. truly has become a global empire since the end of World War II. And like all empires, we... Shush. Like all empires, we no longer hold true to the ideas and the principles that we say we hold when the country was founded, or we don't even really hold true to the mythology we tell ourselves about what this country is supposed to be about. The U.S. truly is a global empire, with bombings, targeted countries targeted for election tampering, which is ironic given all the noise that we're hearing this election cycle about Russian election tampering last time around. U.S. government-sponsored assassination plots and more. It's a really, really powerful infographic. I urge you to go take a look at it. I'll have links to both of the websites referenced in the graphic itself and the Facebook link itself, although I know you may not all be using the Bookface, and believe me, I totally get it. Okay, so on to the war machine. So Mike Preisner posted on Twitter over the weekend linking to an RT news story and a video, which I'll have in the show notes, of course. Here's Mike's tweet. It is no longer speculation that war criminal Elliot Abrams would again sneak military gear in, quote, aid shipments. That's exactly what was found. So Mike's tweet actually links to a tweet from the RT Twitter account talking about a story that was posted on RT over the weekend. They also posted a short video clip with Jorge Arriaza, the Venezuelan foreign minister, that we talked about last week on last week's show from his appearance on Democracy Now! And he's actually discussing the trucks that were set on fire. And there were videos posted all over social media of the Venezuelan military supposedly burning up these aid trucks. And what you didn't hear was the rest of what was found on those trucks. There's actually a short video clip posted to that particular tweet, and I'd like to play the audio from that for you now, and then we'll talk about it on the other side.
In here, we also have trucks. And let me tell you that when the truck was inspected, there wasn't just food and medicine in the truck. There was equipment for barricades. There was nails. This is what was in the truck. Nails, wire. When security forces inspected, this is what they found.
We have information from friendly countries, like Cuba and Russia, that weapons are being bought in Eastern Europe to be given to the opposition with the aim of staging an armed intervention in Venezuela.
Sorry about that. The audio cuts out kind of abruptly there. So the important thing to remember here is that the Trump administration's point man on Venezuela is Elliot Abrams. We've talked about this a little bit last week, but it's worth repeating over and over again until people finally listen to it. The reason the Maduro regime keeps talking about the Trump administration fomenting rebellion, fomenting a coup, the reason the Maduro administration keeps talking about aid is being used as a cover to smuggle weapons and military aid to the rebels, it's because this is the Elliot Abrams playbook. All of this has happened before. Abrams admitted in congressional testimony that he did this exact thing during Iran-Contra. He used USAID shipments to smuggle weapons to the Contras. We've done all of this before. We've done absolutely every bit of this before. The reason that left-wing regimes, particularly left-wing regimes in the global south, but the reason that left-wing regimes are suspicious of us and are suspicious of the U.S. empire is because we have a long history of meddling in their affairs. There's actually a really interesting piece from Venezuela Analysis that shows Hillary Clinton talking about the exact same thing. Let me go get that loaded. Hang on just a second. We'll talk about it in a minute. So the important thing to remember here is that it's not all about the Trump administration. It's not just the Republicans. This is happening in both of the neoliberal war parties. There was a piece posted in Venezuela Analysis back in 2016, which I'd like to quote from for you now. While Hillary Clinton publicly welcomed improved relations with Venezuela as Secretary of State, she privately ridiculed the country and continued to support destabilization efforts, revealed emails leaked by WikiLeaks. In 2010, Clinton asked Arturo Valenzuela, then Secretary of State for Western Hemisphere Affairs, how to, quote, rein in Chavez. They're referring to Hugo Chavez, the leader of Venezuela before Maduro. Valenzuela responded that, quote, we need to carefully consider the consequences of publicly confronting him, but ought to look at opportunities for others in the region to help. And given the meddling that we're seeing now and propping up Juan Guaido, that should be something of an ominous statement for everyone. His answer was in line with the, I'm sorry, quoting from the Venezuela Analysis piece again. His answer was in line with U.S. Embassy strategy in 2006, also revealed in WikiLeaks intelligence cables. Quote, creative U.S. outreach to Chavez regional partners will drive a wedge between him and them, said the confidential cable from the embassy. By refusing to take each of Chavez's outbursts seriously, we frustrate him even more, paving the way for additional Bolivarian miscalculations. We allow room for other international actors to respond. So this is the empire going full bore. We are, not openly, but as openly as we get from State Department cables, we are talking about meddling in the democratically elected leader of another country. Back to the Venezuela Analysis piece. Spain was among the countries willing to help the U.S. in its subversive foreign relations strategy. Former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright passed on a message from the administration of conservative Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy in 2012, expressing intentions to, quote, reorient Spanish foreign policy so that it can work with the U.S. in Latin America, especially on Venezuela and Cuba. While keeping an eye on regional meetings, Clinton was especially concerned with Venezuela. Responding to a United, watch this, shifting the goalposts, or I'm sorry, muddying the waters and just trying to shift the debate. While keeping an eye on regional meetings, Clinton was especially concerned with Venezuela. Responding to a United Nations statement against the coup in Honduras in 2009, which she supported, Clinton shifted the attention to Venezuela. Quote, okay, but have they ever condemned Venezuela for denying press freedom? She wrote to Deputy Chief of Staff Jake Sullivan. He responded, quote, I highly doubt it, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. To which Clinton wrote, ah, the proverbial iceberg. These people are having a great time in these confidential cables, joking to themselves that they're talking about openly destabilizing, openly meddling in the affairs of another country. Clinton was cautious to respond, not to respond to all of Hugo Chavez's, quote, antics, but her staff insisted that Venezuelan politics were a threat to U.S. interests. Remember, this is never, ever, ever about humanitarian aid. This is never, ever, ever about human rights. It is about U.S. interests. From the final section of this report, the U.S. role in the failed attempt to overthrow Hugo Chavez, an email advising how to spend USAID funds strongly suggested refraining from backing leftist sites. Leftist states, rather, like Venezuela, Ecuador, Nicaragua, and Cuba, because the money could, quote, undermine real democratic development and hand over, quote, ownership to populist centralizers. The irony of this particular email, this particular cable, talking about real democratic development from people who are openly meddling, and trying to undermine the elected leader of Venezuela. Okay, so also as part of the U.S. war machine, the drumbeat to war, We talked about this last week. There were pictures, well, pictures and videos shown all over social media of a U.S. aid truck on fire. And, of course, the narrative from the mainstream media at the time was that the Venezuelan military set the truck on fire because Maduro won't let poor, starving Venezuelans have any of this U.S. aid. Reporting on the ground, of course, tells a completely different story. There will be a link to this RT piece in the show notes, but I'd like to read a couple of pieces from this for you. And really, if you get a chance, go check out the RT piece yourself. It links to the actual videos that Max Blumenthal and a couple of other folks have posted. Anyway, the headline is U.S.-backed opposition caught on video throwing Molotov cocktails at an aid truck on the Venezuela border. From the opening graph, the truck caught fire and burned down during a failed attempt on Saturday by U.S.-backed opposition activists to breach the closed Colombia-Venezuela border crossing. The Venezuelan government refuses to let American cargo in, calling these, quote, humanitarian convoys a propaganda stunt and a precursor to military invasion. And then the RT piece links to a tweet by Max Blumenthal with an attached video. This video appears to show the moment when an opposition guerrimbo throws a Molotov cocktail on a truck loaded with U.S. aid. And then there's somebody named Dan Cohen who also tweeted, "This video from today shows the guerrimbos making Molotov cocktails. Did they use them to set the aid truck on fire?" And of course, that's something of a rhetorical question because we're probably not ever going to know the full story of what happened with this particular truck. But again, you cannot trust the mainstream media to tell you the truth or to tell you the full story about what's happening in this drumbeat to war. What they're going to do is tell you the administration's approved narrative, which is that the Venezuelan people are oppressed by this evil socialist government and that poor downtrodden freedom fighters are being targeted by the Venezuelan military and U.S. aid, which is really just U.S. aid. It doesn't actually contain anything but food and medicines. We know that's a lie. It doesn't actually contain anything but food and medicines. It's being torched by the Venezuelan military. Oh, and don't pay any attention to the fact that we've got it on video that opposition rebels are making Molotov cocktails. We've got it possibly on video. It is potentially on video that one of those opposition rebels, one of those right-wing rebels, one of the guerrillas threw a Molotov cocktail at that truck. People first tried to claim that the truck was torched with tear gas until folks all over Twitter pointed out that tear gas is not flammable. And, you know, you have to really, really work to get tear gas to ignite. This RT article, of course, links to a second piece. Who burnt the truck? Venezuelan foreign minister says, quote, false flag expert Pompeo should look among his agents. I would say that you really can't trust anybody in the mainstream media to give you a full picture of what's going on or to give you anything other than a one-sided Trump-approved narrative. And that's the case whether it's coming from ABC, NBC, CBS, the major broadcast networks. That's going to be the case on Fox News. We've already seen that's the case on so-called liberal MSNBC. Please follow the links in the show notes and check out these stories for yourself. I know some of you may have a hard time with the idea that I'm linking to RT. Comments on AudioMac for the show will, of course, be open. If you've got other sources that can refute this RT story, I'd love to take a look at them. I will take a look at anything you find. If your problem with RT is just that they're funded by the Russian government, you know what? I don't care. Truth is truth, whether it's funded by the Russian government or not. Please, people, open your eyes, open your ears, take a look, and see what's being done to justify this coming war. This war is based on lies. Just like every one of our other wars for oil, this war is based on lies. It is being justified to you with a series of lies. The Daily Beast posted a piece on Friday talking about new sanctions. U.S. hits Venezuela with sanctions for blocking humanitarian aid. Reading from the second graph, the visa revocations are intended to punish those who have flourished amid the country's dire economic crisis. It's an economic crisis we created. The reason there's an economic crisis, the reason that the economic crisis continues, is because Venezuela has been cut off from selling oil to its largest customer, that's us. Visa revocations are intended to punish those who have flourished amid the country's dire economic crisis, Elliot Abrams, U.S. Special Envoy to Venezuela, told reporters. Quote, Maduro supporters that abuse or violate human rights, steal from the Venezuelan people, or undermine Venezuelan democracy are not welcome in the United States. Well, isn't that nice? So, let's actually talk about what's being stolen from the Venezuelan people, shall we? There were a couple of tweets posted over the weekend, which I think respond to that quite nicely. Okay, so the first thing I'd like to play for you is a short audio clip from a video posted by Max Blumenthal from the Gray Zone Project, who is actually reporting on the ground in Caracas, in one of the government-subsidized opener markets in Caracas. And then I'd like to link to a tweet from Ben Norton, also reporting for the Gray Zone, with pictures from a similar opener market in Miranda State. Links, of course, will be in the show notes. It's really, really worth your time to go take a look at both of these. Let me go ahead and play that audio clip now from Max Blumenthal's reporting, and then we'll talk about it on the other side.
We are in Parroquia Macarao in the outskirts of Caracas at a food market where food is being sold below market value, subsidized by the city of Caracas, overseen by the mayor of Caracas. And you can see behind me is toothpaste, which CNN has said does not exist in Venezuela.
And what is on the plane are basic goods, things that aren't available or accessible in Venezuela, things like nutritional biscuits, toothpaste, toothbrushes, just basic commodities that aren't available or readily available to Venezuelans right now because of the regime that they're currently living under.
So, I mean, here you have all the basic foodstuffs, pasta, flour. They're focusing on protein here, so you have a fish stand, and it's being sold well below market rate, as you can see from the prices. This is salted fish, puerro poblano.
Okay, so first important point to get to. A consistent part of the narrative is that the average Venezuelan person is starving, that there are these huge food shortages. We saw a video posted on social media from Jose Diaz-Balart purporting to show people digging out of garbage trucks for food, for cast-off food. We talked about that last week. That was quite obviously staged. The other half of that narrative is that because of runaway inflation, basic necessities are either completely unavailable in the country or are completely unaffordable. And so what, of course, they never actually talk about is the fact that Venezuela is a socialist economy. There are government-run markets. There are food subsidies. And that, of course, is not a situation that can go on indefinitely. And nobody is claiming that there is not an economic crisis in Venezuela. What we are saying is that the supposed humanitarian crisis that's being used to justify this war is not the truth. We openly see from that piece that U.S. mainstream media, corporate media, is participating in the lie. They're participating in selling you the narrative that Venezuela is in dire need of our assistance and that the Venezuelan military and the Maduro regime are denying starving Venezuelans that needed assistance. Well, the U.S. State Department knows the truth. The CIA knows the truth. The leadership of the U.S. military knows the truth. They know the truth on the ground for everyday Venezuelans. They know that there is not a mass starvation problem going on in the country. And I'm going to include a link in the show notes. It's really, really important that I think you go get a listen to it. If you're not already subscribed to Abby Martin's Empire Files podcast or her YouTube channel, you should really go now. I think it was last week's episode, or maybe the week before. It's called An Ocean of Lies on Venezuela, and it talks where she interviewed a UN rapporteur who made this exact point, that if you know the truth of humanitarian crisis in Gaza, if you know the truth of actual humanitarian crisis around the world, that the situation in Venezuela, while the economic situation is while the economy is definitely in crisis, there is not what you or I would reasonably call a humanitarian crisis happening on the ground. That narrative of humanitarian crisis exists solely to fuel the drumbeat. I'm mixing my metaphors here. Exists solely to push the narrative that war is not only good for U.S. business interests, but it's good for the Venezuelan people. And the truth is just not that. Also in the same video, Max got a chance to talk to a couple of shoppers at that same communal market. And their responses were, well, to me, they're not surprising at all. But if you've only heard the United States side of the story, they may surprise you. Let me go ahead and play one more short clip from Max Blumenthal's video, and then we'll talk about it on the other side.
Saying we're at peace here in this area, and we don't want war. No quieren guerra.
No, señor. Ni extranjeros tampoco queremos aquí que nos vengan a hacer la guerra aquí en Macarao.
Y nos necesitan ayuda humanitaria de los Estados Unidos.
No, señor.
They don't need the humanitarian aid from the U.S. Y tienen todo lo que necesitan.
Sí, señor.
Sí.
Lleve esa noticia ya, que no que necesitamos nada.
She's saying, tell the news that the truth.
Lo que queremos que nos quiten el bloque.
Okay, so one more thing I'd like to talk about, and then I think we'll wrap it up. This is getting a little long, I think. Also reporting for The Gray Zone, also reporting for The Gray Zone, Ben Norton posted pictures from another open-air market. I'd like to quote from his tweet directly here. He posted, I went to a market this morning in Miranda State, Venezuela, and I still couldn't find the quote humanitarian crisis the U.S. government and corporate media keep talking about. And accompanying his tweet are, of course, three or four pictures. I reposted those on my Facebook and all over social media. And again, no one is denying that there is a severe economic crisis in Venezuela. Absolutely no one denies that the Venezuelan economy is in crisis and that they cannot go on subsidizing food and necessities of daily living indefinitely without access to their most important trading partner, which is us. It's clear that sanctions are not about political change, because we don't care about creating political change. What we care about is getting our hands on the oil. Sorry about that. I misspoke. What I should say is that we don't care about creating political change through any legitimate means. We don't care about backing Juan Guaido in a legal election. What we care about is propping up a puppet. And you have only to look at our history of puppet governments around the world to see that this is a spectacularly bad idea. It's not just a bad idea for the American people. It's not just a bad idea because it's going to cost us yet another $1 trillion war for oil. It's a bad idea because all of the stated justifications for war, spreading democracy and freedom and peace, they're all lies. They're all lies. Please, people, open your eyes and see the truth. Please. The narrative that you're being fed to justify this war, none of it is true. Okay. There will be a link in the show notes to that Empire Files episode I talked about if you want to dive further into just how pervasive the misleading reporting is from the mainstream media. I really, really urge you to go watch that episode. And if you're not subscribed to Abby Martin, hey, why not? You really should be. Anyway, Empire Files is fantastic. Go take a look at it. Okay, so the show's already getting a little long, so I think we're going to end with just one more piece. Over the weekend, the Empire Files Twitter account linked to the announcement of a March 16th March on Washington that's being sponsored by the International Answer Coalition, which, if my memory serves, was one of the major anti-war organizations organizing anti-Iraq war protests in the lead up to the Iraq War, just around 20 years ago now. Quoting from the Answer Coalition's website, on Saturday, March 16, thousands of people will march in Washington, D.C. against the Trump administration's effort to engineer a coup in Venezuela and a new devastating war there. The aggressive policy against Venezuela repeats the ugly pattern of wars for regime change in the oil-rich countries of Iraq and Libya. National Security Advisor John Bolton is reading from the same script, declaring a, quote, troika of tyranny in Latin America, like the, quote, axis of evil, as a precursor for regime change, first in Venezuela, then Cuba and Nicaragua. Trump has always said that the, quote, mistake of the Middle East wars was that the U.S. didn't take the oil. There'll be a link in the show notes. I urge everyone, if you can take the time, I'm going to see if we can get the time. If you can take the time, please, please show up for the March on Washington. March 16th, hands off Venezuela. Hands off Venezuela. Hands off Venezuela. It's crucially important. Please, please let your voice be heard. Okay, everybody, I think that's going to about do it for the show this week. Comments for the show are open on AudioMac, and of course, you can find me in every place that you use to subscribe to all your podcasts. As always, you can hit me up on socials. I'm at WChanley on Twitter and WChanley.net on the web. Thanks, everybody. I hope you're enjoying the show, and we'll see you next week.